Our final presentation of Saber 42 takes a look at the Dodgers class of 68. He will analyze the draft as well as the history of how it all came together. Our presenter is a longtime writer on art and culture. He's originally from Southern California and now lives in Mendota Heights, Minnesota, Michael Fallon.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. As a kid growing up, not a game went by that I was at Dodger Stadium with my dad that he didn't say, starting around the seventh inning, that the true fan was the one who would stick around after the seventh inning in Dodger Stadium. So I want to say thank you for sticking around for here the last innings of this conference. My name is Michael Fallon, and I'm going to talk appropriately enough about the Dodgers draft class of 1968. Just for the sake of this presentation, I want to explain some terms. Draft class, in this case, I'm referring to a group of players chosen by a single team in a single year. I'm not talking about the whole year, all the team's choices that year. I'm just talking about single team choices. Also, for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to talk about players that made the major leagues, obviously, that were drafted by a team, but also that were signed in the year that they were drafted. Because there's a lot of examples through the draft history where a team drafted a future major leaguer, but they didn't sign him that year. They went back into the draft, were signed by another team, and then ended up became star players. So that gets very complicated. So I'm just talking about players that were signed by the team that drafted them in that year. The Dodgers draft class of 68 has often been called the single greatest draft class in the history of the draft. It's been referred to in a number of articles. A quick look at the surface of this draft reveals something about this, why this is so, why it was considered the best ever. In that draft, the Dodgers chose 101 players, and nine of them became major leaguers. To compare to the rest of the draft that year, the other draft classes by other teams, the next highest number of players chosen was 77, chosen by the Cleveland Indians. And the average for draft classes in 1968 was 55.8. This is the history of the draft throughout from 1965 to 2006. For every class, every team's choices, the average number of future major leaguers was 4.87. So the Dodgers' nine major leaguers that year ranks fairly high in the history of draft classes. A couple more facts about this draft. It was considered a down year for the draft. In retrospect, only 11 of the top 20 draft choices in 1968 made the major leagues, which is fairly low historically. And actually, that year, only 4.5 on average major leaguers emerged out of every team's draft. So the Dodgers were doing fairly well in a down year. Some of the accomplishments of the draft class sort of compound why this class has gained so much reputation. Three of the four, three members of the draft class eventually were part of the Dodgers record-setting infield that lasted 8.5 seasons. Garvey, Say, and Lopes were part of the 68 draft class, and they joined Bill Russell in that infield. The average career length of the players that made the major leagues from this class of 68 was 16.4 seasons, compared to the major league average of 5.6 seasons for every player that is drafted that makes the major leagues. And while they weren't the flashiest of players, some of them were bona fide stars. Steve Garvey, for example, during his playing years, was considered quite the star. He was a 74 National League MVP. And then six of the players that were chosen in this draft class collectively appeared in the All-Star game 23 times. Beshore, Alexander, and Buckner each appeared once, I believe. The draft class contributed to success for the team. The Dodgers appeared in 4 World Series while players played for them, and they were members of the 1981 World Championship team. Still, I got to wondering, you know, with all these accomplishments, was this draft class really the best? In the history between 1965 and 2006, there were over 1,100 single team draft classes, and a lot of them were very accomplished. There's a lot of world champions between 1965 and 2006 that weren't the Dodgers. So I got to wondering, how could you empirically decide, and how could you anecdotally decide, and how could you really figure the place of this draft class, if so many people are saying it's the best ever? To go back and answer this question, I had to go back to this day, October 14th, 1965. This was the 7th game of the World Series that year. The Dodgers were playing the Twins just down the road in Bloomington, Minnesota. Sandy Koufax, their ace pitcher, working on 2 days rest, blanked the Twins 2-0 to beat them two straight games and to bring the Dodgers a World Championship, come from behind World Championship. It was the 2nd World Series in 3 years for the Dodgers. It was the 3rd since they had moved to LA in 1958. And in those years, the Dodgers were a pitching strong team. They, in 63 and 65, they had the best pitching, the lowest ERA, the fewest runs allowed. And that's what drove their victories. The pitching, on the other hand, had some negative effects on the team. For one, they were not a very good hitting team. In 1965, for example, they were 7th in batting average in the National League, 9th in slugging percentage, and 8th in runs scored. And going forward from 1965, the team only got worse in hitting. Another problem with the Dodgers' strength in pitching was they were completely unprepared for a major change that was happening in baseball. Just 4 months earlier, before that World Series game, the major leagues had implemented a new method for picking amateur players, the first-year player draft. The purpose of the draft in that year, the stated purpose, was that the major league was concerned about competitive balance among the teams. Probably the more real reason for the draft was they were trying to deal with the exploding bonus payments that that amateur players were getting at that time. In 1964, major leagues paid out $7 million in bonus payments to amateur players. One source said that was higher than the payroll of baseball at the time, but I couldn't confirm that. The highest bonus was paid to a player named Rick Reichert, who got a $205,000 bonus. Not every team supported the draft. Predictably, the richest teams in the league, mostly the Yankees, Cardinals, and Dodgers, who had been paying out the most money in bonus payments, opposed the draft. And for some reason, the Mets did too. The draft did pass, though. The only team to vote against it was the Cardinals. The Dodgers mounted a furious campaign against it. Walter O'Malley questioned its legality, and Buzzy Babasi in the Sporting News gave this 4-pronged, sort of disingenuous attack against the idea of the draft. Despite the concerns of these rich teams, the draft went forward, and at least in the short term, it was quite a success. Rick Monday was the first player ever chosen in the draft in 1965, chosen by the team that had the worst record in 1964, the then Kansas City A's. And his bonus was $104,000, just a little bit more than half of Rick Reichert's the year before. So baseball was happy. The bonuses paid top players were going down. Also, interestingly, the competitive balance, at least in this particular instance, was affected. The A's, which had a terrible record for 10 years leading up to the draft year, they'd only won 40% of their games. They drafted the core of a world championship team. And the 10 years after their players started emerging into the major leagues in 1967, their win percentage went up by 15 percentage points. Meanwhile, just as a side point, I want to say that the Rick Monday had a history with the Dodgers as well. In 1962, the Dodgers tried to sign him as a bonus baby. They offered him $20,000, which he refused after consulting with his mother. He had gone to Santa Monica High School. He decided that he wanted to go to college, so he went to Arizona State and became an All-American and was part of the national championship team in 1965 before he was drafted. So the Dodgers watched the first draft and they saw Rick Monday pop up. By 1968, Rick Monday was an All-Star. He was batting .311 at the time of the draft. His OPS was .833, which was higher than any Dodger regular. And the Dodgers, meanwhile, in 1968, were on an opposite trajectory. Whereas in 65 and 66, their win percentage was almost 60%. They had fallen off. In 1967, they fell off to eighth place. And in 1968, they were in the midst of their second losing season in a row, which was the first time in 30 years that that had happened for the Dodgers. So, predictably, Walter O'Malley and the Dodger management got concerned. They started and they said, "We got to do something about this." Particularly since the attendance at Dodgers games had fallen off by a million fans from 66 to 68. So they said, "We got to do something about the draft." Then an interesting set of circumstances occurred. The Dodger GM on the left here, Buzzy Bavasi, had kind of fallen out with Walter O'Malley. He had been with the Dodgers 17 years as their GM at that point, and O'Malley was pressuring him, probably. They weren't getting along, and starting in January, he was increasingly talking to expansion teams about going to work for them. He was interested in becoming a partner. It's interesting having a greater role. And O'Malley said no. So he was starting to fade out. He's talked the talk, but from all records, he wasn't very much of a factor in that draft that year. And in fact, he would announce on June 8th, the day after the draft, that he was going to go to the San Diego Padres, become a part owner with them. His replacement was Fresco Thompson, who was at the time the head of the minor leagues director with the Dodgers. But also starting in January, he was suffering from liver problems, and it turned out he would have liver cancer, and he would pass away in November of that year. So he also was likely not playing a huge role, which left it all up to a 52-year-old man named Al Campanis, who was at the time their scouting director. And this was the key moment of Al Campanis' life. He was facing huge pressure. The Dodgers were a win-now sort of franchise at the time. And he talked with his assistant scouting director, Bill Schwepp, and they came up with a very unusual strategy to deal with the draft. Again, remember, the draft is only, this is the fourth year of the draft at this point. From all reports, the draft, the baseball draft, which was the last of the four major American sports to have a draft, was a wild and woolly sort of circus affair. And Campanis went to three advisors to talk to them. The three are from the top left, Dan Reeves, an NFL star, and then the owner of Los Angeles Rams. Sid Yeoman on the right, going around clockwise, the coach of the San Diego Chargers, the famous coach of San Diego Chargers. And most importantly, Al Casale at the bottom there he was the draft coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, talking to football players, football people about the draft in a different sport with a different set of circumstances, a different athlete, a completely different draft may seem strange, but it was actually kind of inspired considering that the NFL had established its draft, coincidentally for many of the same reasons of baseball's, in 1936. So the NFL teams had had a long history and a lot of time to figure out how to do this. And so The information that they got from the NFL helped guide their draft, and this is what they learned. The NFL people said, numbers, draft a lot of people, because that's how you get to the cream, which led to them choosing 101 players. In those days, the draft didn't have an upward limit on draft rounds. Later on, they would, but at this time, they could draft essentially as many players as they could afford to put in their farm system. And Locatel also talked about paperwork, you know, being organized, get organized up in advance with a goal to evaluation. And this is very important that he said you got to have evaluation standards. You got to bring together your guys, your scouts, and get a common language. Talk about what something means. What does it mean that he has a good eye, etc. Now, Campanis was a guy who came up from the scouting corps. He was the scouting director. He started with the Dodgers after a very brief playing career. He started as a scout. So he took this to heart, and he also said best available talents. He knew he needed hitters. He heard what they were saying about the language. He developed standards. Now, if you look at their records of what they wrote about the players, it was very rudimentary, but it was very accurate. You know, about Lopes, Davey Lopes, they said, they praised him for having great speed and good batting eye. About Say, they said he had a good bat and solid power. About Garvey, they said he was a sharp hitter, but had poor range. And all these things were very accurate. Very rudimentary, but very accurate. So, coming to these nine guys, how do we determine if they're the best with all this history, with what they were doing? This is not a stat heavy report, but just look, and that's kind of broken up, just looking at some of the numbers, if you look and take these guys, they have an astounding number of careers, seasons played, 148. The career wins above replacement that these guys contributed during their careers was 212. If you look at the next highest draft classes, they're almost 50 wins above replacement than the next highest team, which was the 1976 Boston Red Sox. That was the Wade Boggs draft class. So yes, this is in one respect, this is by far the most productive group of guys ever brought together in a draft. Now I got to thinking about this. However, you know, if you look at what they intended for this to create competitive balance. They wanted to bring players into teams through the draft. I got to thinking, well, okay, these guys career-wise are by and large the best single group ever chosen by one team, but how much did they contribute to their individual team? And how does that compare to other draft classes? If you do that, if you say, what is the career wins above replacement that a group that groups bring to their team that drafts them, an interesting thing happens. The Dodgers team actually falls to second. If you take that as your rubric, there's one team that actually produced more wins for the team that drafted them. Now, it's a different set of circumstances because the Dodgers were a very win-now kind of franchise in those years. They had a long history, and they were losing, and they wanted to win. So they traded away. They traded away Pastorek. They traded away Zahn, and they traded, most notably, they traded away Doyle Alexander after only briefly appeared in one season for them. They got, in that trade for Alexander, they got Frank Robinson, who didn't produce a lot for the Dodgers, and he was only with them for 1 year. But Doyle Alexander had a 19-year career and had 30 wins above replacement. So if they had kept Doyle Alexander, this class would have by and far been the largest. But the Alan Trammell, Jack Morris draft of 76, they stayed with the Tigers. The Tigers were willing to stick with their players longer. One thing that's interesting, by the way, this yellow, these are active teams. So I was looking at, you know, teams that still have active players that are still accumulating wins above replacement. And I wanted to see what were the top 10 of those teams to compare to see if any of them could ever catch the ones that all the players have retired. I'm just pointing out that the Cardinals may have had a chance if Pujols had stayed with the Cardinals, but since he's gone now, the Cardinals likely won't catch up with the Dodgers and Tigers. One last thing I'll say about this Tigers team. I don't know if the draft team, the general manager on the Tigers, was influenced by the Dodgers. Recall that this, we're talking about the first decade of the draft, basically. But one thing that's interesting that connects the two general managers is Jim Campbell of the Tigers was very much like Al Campanis, a guy who came up through the scouting corps. And in fact, his assistant general manager, Bill LaJoie, also was a scout. And that's fairly unusual in those years. It's not unheard of that a general manager would come up through the scouting ranks. It was more common for them to either come up through the players' ranks, players, coaching manager, general manager, and even more common for them to start as business guys, as admin guys. But whatever the case, what's interesting is that these two teams are definitely, by and large, the best draft classes ever. And in fact, their stats are very similar. They both had 11 winning seasons after the draft occurred. They both won one World Series. So they're very, very close. So that's the conclusion that I can come to. I think also what's interesting is that, you know, with what these guys innovated was that if you have a strategy, you stick with the strategy, you evaluate clearly, you communicate that evaluation, and then you stick to your players, then the draft can really create that competitive balance that was intended to create. Thanks.
Do we have any questions for Michael? We'll take the fellow in the back.
Just a note, Al Campanis, you mentioned his brief playing career. He played on the 1946 Montreal Royals. He was their shortstop. Anybody care to guess the second baseman on that? Pretty ironic in light of what happened, what, 5 decades later?
That was a tragic moment, I think, for all Dodger fans when that happened, and a very confusing one. But all the guys, people around Dodger said he was not what he presented that day, and that he also was a great GM for the team.
Any more questions?
We'll go. Have you thought about which teams adapted least well to the draft?
Well, yeah, I did. I mean, as going through this and looking at stats for all the drafts and trying to piece together, you know, which draft classes were the best, you do start to pick up trends. And it's interesting, one of the ones that seemed to be the worst drafting teams ever, it seemed to yield the fewest established major leaguers, is the Yankees. Which is interesting because the draft obviously changes in 1976 when you have free agency and the draft becomes part of the way that they compensate free agency. So it complicates things and in those years from 65 to 76, the Yankees were not very good. I think there's a lot of stuff that you could do about draft history and a lot of stuff I was wanting to do, but I wanted to stay focused.
Any more questions for Michael? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Michael, for a look at one of the great draft classes of all time that was described for years by the great Vince Scully.